From Nashville to Los Angeles, this is the Indie Bohemians.
Ron Placone here. You are listening to the Indie Bohemians. Got another one for you. Stoked about my guest this week, Felicia Michaels, comedian. I have been trying to have her for a long time. We've been going back and forth. It's definitely been for months. I'm pretty sure since before the new year. So we're going back at least about 6 or 7 months. I've been nagging her to come on the show. And she's a very busy comedian. She's very funny. She's awesome. She tours a lot. And she stays busy with a lot of projects in LA. So it was really tough to get her to do the show. But finally, I was just like, the other day, I was like, hey, do you have time to record Wednesday morning? She was like, yeah, I do. I was like, boom, we're doing it. And went over to her place and sat in her living room. You can hear the birds chirping. It was a beautiful sunny day in Los Angeles. And we talked, we had a really nice talk. She had quite the life that I was not aware of. Spent some time in Germany. And so we dove into that really early on. We talk a lot about her childhood in Germany and the stories that she heard from her mother and grandmother. And they lived through World War II. They lived through the Holocaust. They were in Germany while that stuff was going on. While the wall was still up, of course. So some interesting stuff that we dive into early on. We go pretty deep and pretty dark right away. And I like it. It was cool. So anyway, my whole 30, I'm almost done. I don't want to say I'm counting the days, but I'm totally counting the days. Got just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more days, pretty much. Wait, no, less than that. Sorry, I counted until the end of the month. Hold up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 more days. 5 more days. You know, I'm not having cravings. It's not weird. I'm just to the point where I'm ready for it to be over. My girlfriend and I have discovered a sweet treat for ourselves. We call it ice cream. It is not ice cream. It is the version of ice cream we can have. What it is it's coconut cream and frozen mango put in a blender and then eaten. So it's like a smoothie meets this is kind of ice cream-esque. And it's delicious. And it's something I would always do anyway. But that is the closest thing to sweets I have had. That and, of course, my bananas in almond butter, which is delicious, by the way. That's something else I'm going to continue. I'm going to continue a lot of the habits I developed doing this thing. I'm just going to be able to have a bowl of pasta every now and again. And when my friends ask me, hey, do you want to come to lunch with us? I'm not going to be like, you know, no, I don't think so, because you guys are just going to be eating stuff I wish I could have, and I'm not going to be able to have any of it. I went to Korean barbecue with a group of friends, because a friend of mine was in from out of town. She was in from Colorado. So we met up with her friends that she was visiting, and her husband, and me and my girlfriend were there, and we all wanted to go out for Korean barbecue, or well, they did. I was happy just sitting and talking, because I can't have anything, but we went, and me and my girlfriend, of course, ordered separately at our table, and all we could really do was have the grilled meats with salt on it. That was pretty much all we could do. Like all this, you know, the Korean barbecue where they have the stuff at your table, and then the meat's cooked right there. All the stuff at our table, my girlfriend goes to serve. She goes, so what, we can't have any soy because of this diet. What can we do? And he pointed at this, like, pickled cabbage type thing. He's like, you can have this, I'm pretty sure. That was it. That was all we could have. So, we were the most popular people in our group because we were giving everybody else the food that was intended for us. We couldn't have the salad because it was a ginger. There was something in the dressing we couldn't have. We couldn't have any of the other vegetables at the table because they all had soy in them. Somewhere, and we couldn't have a lot of the meats. We couldn't have any of the marinates. Like we couldn't have any marination or anything like that. We just had to have just grilled meats. It was quite an expensive excursion for just grilled meats. The meats were delicious, don't get me wrong. It was still a fun experience, but it was actually the first time I did Korean barbecue. I'd never done it. I've been to a Korean restaurant before. And I've had that type of cuisine before, but never in the barbecue context where they make it at the table. I had not done that before. Just never came up in my life. I've always wanted to do it. Just, you know, never did it. But, so, I'm looking forward to having another experience, because I kind of feel like my first time was very abbreviated. It was a very abbreviated version of what that experience is all about. I still enjoyed it, don't get me wrong, and I was there more for the social aspect of it, catching up with a friend of mine that I've been friends with since I was 10 years old and have not seen in a while. Last time I saw her was when I was moving out to Los Angeles, because on the way, I had a little drought in gigs and in space, because, you know, that part of the Southwest, very vast. So I stopped in Colorado at their place for a night to crash, and then the next day we went out, did some stuff around Grand Junction where she lives, and then I continued on my journey. So that's all happening. So anyway, I'm just ready for this diet to be over is what I'm saying. Korean barbecue is not quite what it could be otherwise in a different context. And I'm ready for just more experiences. Just ready for that. Anyway, some housekeeping. Gotta do some housekeeping. RonPlacone.com for all my latest dates. We're gonna be in Chicago next month. June 10th, we're gonna be at the Zanies in Rosemont, Illinois. Jimmy will also be doing some stuff at the People Summit in Chicago, Illinois. So our only show is June 10th at Zanies Rosemont. That's Jimmy Dore live show. If you don't have your tickets, unfortunately, that show is sold out. San Francisco, Jimmy Dore fans, tickets are still available for our July 15th show at the Great Star Theater in San Francisco, California. Really excited to be going up to San Francisco. And for all of our local LA shows, please go to JimmyDoreComedy.com or my website, RonPlacone.com. And working on booking another music show here in LA. Waiting to hear back on that. There's been some changes in the venue. If things don't pan out with the Old Town Pub, I might look into doing it somewhere else. And on the live show front, that's pretty much all I got. It's pretty much all that's been going on. As far as this show goes, got some guests coming up I'm real excited about. Don't want to say anything quite yet, but got some exciting guests. So all that is happening. RonPlacone.com for all the latest updates. We're going to get right into my chat with Felicia because I'm really excited about it. I was super happy to have her, and I think I've babbled on enough about my excitement about this. I'm just going to get straight to it. Oh, real quick disclaimer. So today's Monkey Minute is pro Predators, Nashville Predators in the NHL, which, you know, some of you guys know, the Nashville Predators are my second favorite hockey team. My first favorite hockey team is the Pittsburgh Penguins, who play tonight, and if they win, they're going to the Cup, too. So, hey, if the Pens lose, I hope they don't, but if they lose, I'm rooting for the Predators to take it all the way, absolutely. But if the Penguins win, and it's Penguins versus Predators, you know, I'll be happy for the Predators if they win the Cup, yes, but I'm rooting for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They are my favorite team. Predators are my second favorite team. Been a Preds fan for a while now. Lived in Nashville for a while. You guys know that. But grew up with the Penguins. They're my first team. So, and it'll be kind of trippy if my personal two favorite teams go up against each other in the Stanley Cup. That'll be pretty cool. But, you know, I of course, I value our mother station, WRFN. I value Angie and respect her right to give a vouch for the Preds. But I gotta say, those opinions at the moment do not reflect my own. I'm Ron Placone. You're listening to the Indie Bohemian.
Here's your Monkey Minute. I am Angie Doran for the Indie Bohemians. From NPR, Uncle Fat is a morbidly obese wild monkey in Thailand. He weighs 60 pounds and he's now popular on social media. Tourists just kept giving him junk food until the macaque was captured by a wildlife official last month. Uncle Fat is now on a diet of lean protein and produce in hopes of having him lose 40 pounds and returning him to the wild. When he loses all that weight, do you think they'll change his name to maybe Uncle Skinny or maybe Slim Shady? Gotta wonder about that. That's the Monkey Minute. I'm Angie Doran for the Indie Bohemians.
Ron Placone here. You are listening to the Indie Bohemians. And my guest this week, Felicia Michaels, a comedian I'm a huge fan of. We've been trying
really?
To schedule this. Yeah,
really?
I love your stuff. Yes.
What's wrong with you?
Well, that would take up the
question,
entire
right?
interview if I answered that. But... But I like, yeah. We've been trying to schedule this for months now.
I know.
You're always out on the road, working.
Well, I always somebody's got something shaking, yeah. Yeah.
So, let's start at the beginning. So, where did you grow up?
I am an Army brat. So, I was born in Kansas, but because my father was in the service and my mother was from Germany, she was not a war bride, she was not that old, but, you know, they always wanted to go back to Germany a lot. And so we were stationed all over. So I grew up a little bit everywhere.
Wow. And so you spent some time in Germany then?
Yeah, as a kid.
Do you like it there? See, that was my...
Until the age of 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you still speak it?
You know, I could get us to the train station and get us a pastry and a coffee on the way. And know where the bathroom is, and there that's you all you need.
Right? Yeah, totally. Yeah. I loved Germany when I went.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, like, I think Berlin is one of my favorite cities.
Berlin, that's where my mother was from and where I lived quite a few years. And Berlin is a fantastic city, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just dig the grittiness of it. I dig the, like, kind of subculture underbelly of it.
Oh, for sure,
And, of course, like, the way they embrace, not embrace, maybe embrace isn't the right word, but the way they confront is maybe the better word, their history.
Right, yes,
it's
yes.
Very, it's very special, I think.
Yeah.
The way they do that. And, you know, yeah. It's pretty, you know, pretty remarkable to see the way they confront obviously the Holocaust and the way they confront the yeah. wall and the way
well, they should.
Well, absolutely they should. Absolutely yeah. they should. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, especially when you look at it in comparison to, you know, here or somewhere like that,
right.
I feel like they've really done a good job.
Well, I, growing up in Berlin, I'm a little bit older than you, but, you know, I grew up in Berlin when the wall was still there and mm-hmm. my grandfather was buried on the east side of the wall, so we never got to visit his grave or anything. But my mother grew up and was born in 1940, so she grew up not just in Berlin, but when the war happened, they went to Bavaria, and they lived in a small town at the foot of Eagle's Nest.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. It's a really crazy story. Yeah.
So let me ask you this then. What was that like? How was that explained to you as a kid? I mean, you couldn't go see your grandfather's right. grave. How was that? What was your cognizance of that as a child? Because
I definitely remember. My mother didn't speak much about it. I definitely remember growing up and the wall being a scary thing. And since my father was in the service, I lived on base, or not base, but in military housing outside the base, and we also lived on the economy, which is just on the Kurfürstendamm, which is the K-Dam, I'm sure I'm not saying that right, and which was not too far from the wall. And I remember being on the bus one time, and older kids would make fun and jokes about it all the time, about the wall, and they would say, like, I heard October 1st the Germans are coming over the wall. And when you're in fourth grade, that'll make you poop your pants. You know what I mean?
What did they mean by the Germans?
Like the East Germans will come over the wall.
Okay.
The Russians are coming. You know, like they would tease us little kids because it was kind of scary. I mean, we would take field trips to the wall and went to a lot of art and museum exhibits with art depicting World War II. And I asked my mother what was her first memory, because she was born in 1940, of the war. And she had a couple answers, but her first one is, ultimately, my first memory was my mother carrying me running down the street and both sides of the street being on fire and it being so hot that it melted my eyelashes. And that was my mother's first memory.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that crazy? Because people don't realize, insane. Like, Dresden was firebombed. Berlin wasn't necessarily firebombed. Pretty close, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so much was destroyed. And obviously, for, you know, they had to do what they had to do. I have no judgment on that. It's a terrible thing. But, and then I asked my aunt. My mother passed away quite a few years ago. And I asked my aunt when I had visited her. And she said, I said, because here's the thing. When they were in Bavaria, my grandfather had passed. And so my aunt, who was very young, her husband, my grandfather, was much older than her. And she had taken her two daughters. And my aunt was 10 years older than my mother. And she had taken her daughters to go to Bavaria because Berlin was being bombed like crazy. And they got you know, I don't know how they got to Bavaria. And they stayed at this hotel at the foot of Eagle's Nest. Well, because of war inflation, they ran out of money. They had some money. and they ran out of money. So my grandmother became a manager of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it was, you know, craziness. And at that hotel, which was at the outskirts of this little town in Bavaria, is actually the hotel where all the German officers would stay on their way to Eagle's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
And so because she was the manager of the kitchen, she would send my aunt, who was 10 years older than my mother, to the bakery to go get bread, because since that was the hotel where all the SS officers and all that stayed, they got first pick on all the good food. And my aunt told me this story about her mother sent her to the bakery to get bread, and she was walking back out through the outskirts of town, and because I asked her what the specific question I asked her is, when did you have a recognition of what was going on with the Jewish people, like the atrocities? And mm-hmm. she said, I was walking back with this basket of bread, and there was like a chain gang of Jews, and there were soldiers, and they were doing road work. And as I walked by, one was so hungry, he came at me and grabbed a piece of bread from my basket because he was so hungry and not realizing literally what he was doing. It made my basket drop, and that someone came over and killed him right in front of me, the soldier,
oh my God.
And picked up all the bread and put it in my basket. And I went home, and I go, did you tell Uma, which was my grandmother? And she goes, I did. And she slapped me across the face and said, don't tell anyone you saw that. And
oh
so that
God.
Was how it went down there. And then she told me a story about at the end of the war, you know, a lot of Germans they wanted to be in denial. I'm sure 38% of the Germans, I say that because 38% of our country is running our country right now,
right.
You know, because of Trump. Oh, sorry.
That's
because
okay.
of Trump. Yeah. Sorry, I won't do that again. And she said that when they went into the camps, they took all those films, but you know, that we see nowadays historically, and that they made these makeshift tents, and they would go into all the towns, and they would make and in these makeshift tents, they would show the films. And part of the martial law, I think, at the time was they said if certain people over a certain age had to go and witness what they were participating in, because they were participating, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And whether they wanted to believe it or not, they were participating. And she said she just remembers after the film was done how everyone couldn't talk, just in complete shock of being confronted what they had backed.
Yeah, I mean, that's wow. And,
you
know? And I can't imagine being a child and witnessing
that
or just being cognizant of anything. I mean, that's unbelievable. That story is it is believable because that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
But just a child with a basket of bread.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my
and,
God.
I mean, people don't, when you really think about war and you think about that time, you don't think about the little things that happened that were such a big implication on how people led their lives. I mean, in 1942-43, at that time, they took all the able-bodied men out of the villages and out of the cities. And if you were 13, 14, 12 even, they took you
mm-hmm.
to go serve. And so when the Russians came in, because I believe the Russians came in before the Americans, or something happened like that, my grandmother hid my aunt in the attic in a pickle barrel
mm-hmm.
because they were so afraid of the Russians. They were so happy that when the Americans came, but they had a lot of fear over the Russians.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just, wow, quite
so
quite
that's
staple.
The stories I grew up on.
That's what you were.
Yeah, so to say, what is your
so if you ever complained
first,
about moving around, let's talk about our first memories.
Right,
Alicia.
Yeah.
I know you're bummed out we have to move.
Right, I know. But it's, you know, even though I didn't witness it myself, obviously it was my mother and my grandmother and
mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. To think about everything that goes on in the world today and what we're doing in Yemen or what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen and what goes on, it makes you really think about that in a much deeper level. It's one thing to go about your life in America and think, oh, there's atrocities, poor people happening other places. But when you really start thinking about the dynamics of what that means,
mm-hmm.
you know, it should make you get off your butt and go march.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, just the whole concept of, like, yeah, there's people that live in a place, and they will just be going about their day.
Right.
You know, like, anyone, well, it's a lot different. Their day includes trying to find clean drinking water and stuff
right,
like that.
Right.
But then a bomb might be dropped on them.
And for the women and the little girls, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously all children and all human beings, but how it's double fold over the atrocities for the women and the little and young girls, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry to go off on that rant.
No. I mean, that's very interesting, and yeah, that certainly. I mean, I'd imagine those types of stories really framed an interesting perspective for you.
Absolutely.
So, where were you when you started comedy?
Colorado Springs, Colorado.
No kidding.
Yeah,
okay.
I know.
So you found your way to the Southwest.
Well, my parents had gotten divorced in Berlin, and then my mother remarried another GI, and it was kind of a weird thing because my mother was German and my father was American, and although my mother was naturalized, she wanted to stay in Germany, but my father and couldn't allow me to stay because if you bring over a dependent, you have to bring that dependent back.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go back with my father. My mother was in Germany, and that was really the only way she could, at the time, figure out to get back and come get me. And so when she remarried, she married a young soldier who was quite a few years younger. And they married when Maggie May was a big song on the radio, and my mother's name was Maggie.
Oh,
so,
wow.
She would be like, "This song is about me," because he was like 12 years younger than her.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know.
That's brilliant.
My mother was one of the original Cougars. And so he was stationed at Fort Carson, so we ended up in Colorado. And
no.
That's where I started comedy, yeah.
Yeah, as a small side note, I once dated a girl for a little bit that was a little, you know, significantly older than me, and we were kind of talking it out, like, you know, is there, because she kind of, you know, wanted something longer term, and I wasn't sure if that was, you know, kind of in the cards for us. I just felt like
right.
we were in different chapters of life.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we could kind of blend. You know, and I was like, well, you know, if you're really feeling that way, maybe it's best if we kind of, you know, part now and so we can stay friends, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
And we were having like this kind of heavy conversation about it, you know, where it's like, you know, I don't know if I want kids or not, but I know that if I wanted a long-term thing with you, my answer would have to be no. And I don't know if I'm ready to do that yet, you know, cause
right.
she had already been there, done that, you know?
Right.
As we're having this conversation, Maggie May came on.
Oh, really?
It came on like the XM station we were listening to. And I was like, oh, that's beautiful. But
wow,
anyway,
wow.
So was Looney's there at the time then? The comedy
no,
club?
It was at that time. I believe it was a club called Comedy Corner, because what happened was when I grew up in the military as a kid, my father and stepfather were both obviously in the military. And so, as all good little teenage girls do, I married a GI
mm-hmm.
when I was just turned 18.
Oh, wow. How'd you meet that dude?
A friend of a friend.
Okay.
And because we all dated GIs, you know, because they were, you know, you were 17, they were 19, you know what
uh-huh.
I mean? It's like what you did. And so he was abusive, so we got a divorce like 6 months later. And I was working at a strip joint.
Okay.
Called the Peppermint Lounge, and it was actually before I was working. I did a wet t-shirt contest as an audition to get into
oh, okay.
the Peppermint Lounge, and a comedian was there, and he was a local comedian, this guy named Jeff Valdez, and so it was and he started the Comedy Corner, which later became Looney's,
mm-hmm.
and so we were dating, and then he took me to the Comedy Works. This is so many years ago, in Denver. And, no, it wasn't the Comedy Works. It was George McKelvey's Comedy Club at the time.
Okay.
And I went on stage, and I bombed. It was terrible. And then my last name, real last name, is Dye. And the MC goes, and that was Felicia Dye. And the guy yelled out, yeah, she sure did die. And then I cried.
Oh, jeez.
I was like 19. I was outside crying. And then Jeff Valdez was like, what are you doing? I go, I'm crying. Stupid comment, I'm never going to do it again. He's like, well, don't effing do it, dummy. And then I was like, I'll show you. And that's how I got into comedy.
Well, did you guys keep dating after that, or was that? I mean, that wasn't a very supportive guy.
I put 5 minutes together, got laughs, and got the heck out of Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you met the comic at the strip club you were
at. The strip club.
And then you guys started dating?
And we started dating, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how did that unfold? Like, did he just come up to you after you were done with your set, or what?
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
Pretty much. I mean,
And then he was like, you should come to this open mic, or you should come do this. You should tell jokes.
No, it wasn't. It didn't work out that way. What happened was we went on a couple of dates,
mm-hmm.
and this is what happened. We went to the Comedy Works,
mm-hmm.
and on a date, and there was this girl that just ate the worst death on the planet, and I was 19 and had two drinks, and I was like, ah, I can be funnier than that. And he was like, no, you can't. Comedy's harder than stripping. And then we made a bet, and then that's how I did it on a dare.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how I got into comedy.
So he dared you, and then he was like, don't ever do it again.
Yeah.
If you bomb once, you never do it again. That's how comedy works.
Right, I know, right. So then I did it again. Yeah.
I've broken that rule hundreds of times.
Me too.
I've broken that rule so many times.
Me too. Sadly so.
So you got your funny 5 minutes, and then you got out of Colorado. What does that mean?
Then I got out of Colorado. Well, at that time, and the comics that were in Colorado at that time, one of them was Roseanne Barr.
Mm-hmm.
And so I moved to L.A., and I'd been doing the open mic scene around town, and then she came to L.A. She stayed at my house, and she went on at the Comedy Store on a Monday night. Monday nights used to be the big night at the Comedy Store. I don't know if you know that. That used to be the best night at the Comedy Store.
And well, it still is a special night, right? I mean, that's when the big open mic is. And
yeah, but it was jamming on a Monday night.
Really?
That was like the place. And she, Mitzi made her a regular, put her up in the main room, and then she got the Tonight Show like immediately. It was like crazy, yeah. It was really a wonderful time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great time.
Yeah. So you've been in L.A. since?
Yeah, I lived in New York for a good 9 years.
Okay, between. So you did bounce back and forth.
Bounced back and forth, yeah.
You never thought about going the road route? It was always just like...
No, I did the road.
You did... Well, yeah, you did the road. But, right. But like you were always kind of like in L.A. and New York.
Yeah, but I mean, there was a good 10 years where I did about 30, 35 weeks a year on the road.
And you were still being based in... L.A., New York.
L.A., New York, yeah. Okay. It's easier. It was easier out of New York.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just because of, like, the density.
Yes, so exactly.
I know a lot of people, that's why, like, they'll pick New York
to live.
Over
it's
LA.
Just easier.
Yeah, it's just easier. Like, well, I can still do the road and you know, still make a living on the road and then try to, you know, open other doors in New York as opposed to, you know, the road is, you know, pretty tough here in L.A. I think I've done one weekend so far this year.
Really?
Yeah, I don't really do the road much anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I did it full time for 5 years.
Well, I really miss those days. Like, when I first started, it was, I hate to say this and date myself, but mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing else. It was just the road or the Tonight Show. I mean, mm-hmm. pretty much. When the 90s came about, there was a lot more TV you could do, but you still, that's how you made your living. But now... even though I miss those days, it's so great that you can reach people in so many different ways without having to get on a toxic airplane.
Yeah.
I mean, a kajillion times.
Right. No, it is interesting because it's like I'll talk to, you know, like people that I work with now or people that, and they'll be like, they'll be talking about, and in some ways, there are some parallels, you know, like there still are a lot of things that have not changed much.
Oh, I think it's changed tremendously.
Oh, it has.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
I just mean there are still some things that.
But
haven't.
Even the littlest things have changed. Like you could do a joke. If you wrote a joke that wasn't based on a topical thing, that joke would be with you for 15 years, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could do that joke forever. And now, because there's the positive of so many outlets to get your comedy. The negative is that material gets burned off.
Yeah, you burn it off because you want to put it on YouTube so more people find you.
Right, right.
And then, but yeah, no, it's definitely, it's just interesting to me because, you know, like I'll be talking to, you know, some in a lot of comics where it's like, yeah, when I first moved to town, I would do a handful of college gigs to just get by.
Mm-hmm.
And... that was how I survived at first. Like, same with me. Like, that was me when I first got the job. But then it's like, it changes because it's like, well, the job I have now, you know, didn't exist
right
in the 90s, you know, like something like that. Just it wasn't even possible when I was in college. Like, if someone told me, yeah, you're gonna be working for a YouTube show, I'd be like, a what?
Yeah, like, right. No, absolutely.
Like, I was like, you mean that website that, like, a couple of my friends put videos of them, of them going on a roller coaster on?
Yeah. It was such a different
There's a job in that.
Time in comedy there. You know, like, I was made a regular at the Comedy Store pretty young in my career, barely 21. And it was such a rock and roll time of comedy, you know. It was really amazing. And now, you know, comedy is coming back. It went away for a while. In popularity, but I love that it's coming back. But it's different. It's more corporate now.
In what way? Elaborate on that.
It's more corporate in the sense of, you know, like this morning I got a text from a comic friend of mine at 7:30 in the morning. You would have never called someone or tried to, you know, communicate with someone at 7:30 in the morning. Noon, 1 o'clock.
Oh,
you know
okay.
what I mean? Because all you had to do was comedy, maybe write a little bit, but that's mm-hmm. all you had to do. And now it's corporate in the sense of, I have to have a podcast, and I have to have my website, and I have to do this, and I have to do
right.
that, and I have to write jokes, and every day I need to have 3 jokes, and you know what I mean? And I need to have this, and I need to have that, and I have to have Twitter followers, and I have to have a Facebook presence, and what about my blog, and
right.
that was not how it was back then at all.
Yeah,
you know,
that
at
is
all. It was just you wrote jokes and you did your jokes and you lived your life and you had a good life if you mm-hmm. could, if you got in the right circle, you know. That's what's changed. That's what I mean by more corporate.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
there's less time to lounge about the pool and be like, well, I don't have to be anywhere until this college next week.
Right.
Yeah, it's yeah.
I mean, I definitely have a memory of in the early 90s of being in Rick. I don't know if you know Rick Messina.
I know the name. But
he was a big producer, one of the producers eventually of Home Improvement. He had Tim Allen for a long time. Very great, just a great guy. And I was in his office, and someone had sent him a very nice packet, you know, with a tape and then like a laminated thing with, you know, his headshot and then everything where he's performed and jokes. And I actually remember him throwing it in the trash, going, this guy for sure is not funny. Not even looking at it. Because if you had enough time to do that, that meant you weren't working on your act. You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so
and now it's the complete opposite.
Right.
Or, like, I do a lot of photography and a lot of video kind of stuff. And in the beginning, when I was doing my photography, it was about comedians. And I would say to someone, oh, and, you know, I'd like to do this book of photography. I would have people say, no, don't tell people you're doing other things. You're just a comic. Just tell people you're a comic. You don't want to make people think you have too much going on or that you're not focusing on your comedy. And now when you meet people, like, to
now
get mad
like,
and now, yeah, now
on?
It's like, hey, screw the comedy. What else do you have going on? What are you working on? What are you doing? How many Twitter followers? You know, it's like completely
so
upended comedy. Like, I don't think young comedians understand that, you know, that's kind of the way it used to be. Like, if you, you know, it's funny how it's changed.
So, yeah, I would not have realized. I know that they tell you when you get the meeting, if you go in there and they're like, so what do you do? And you're like, I'm a funny comedian. They're going to be like, okay, next.
Yes.
Because
yes.
that's just like, it's,
yeah,
what do you got
yeah,
going on?
Yeah.
I assumed it was always that way to an extent. I never would have guessed that it used to almost
right.
be the opposite the
right.
way you're describing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, were you always political, or did that come later, and how did that unfold?
Well, I was known originally as one of the dirtiest women in comedy.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, I don't
okay.
know if you know that about me.
I did not know that about you. I can't imagine that.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my God, you have no idea. So when I was started out doing comedy, I said I came from a stripping background,
mm-hmm.
and before I was made a regular at the Comedy Store, I used to strip down at the airport at this place called the Jet Strip,
mm-hmm.
and it's funny because I never talked about that literally for 20 years, but now I'm like, you know, screw it,
mm-hmm.
might as well talk about it. And when I came to the Comedy Store at that time, you have to imagine, I mean, it was Sam Kinison, it was Paul Mooney. There was a lot of drugs going through there, like people were partying. It was pretty crazy. I mean, it was pretty insane. And the Comedy Store was very dirty. You know, the improv were pretty much like guys like Bill Maher would work out, were guys that were, you know, topical joke writers. A lot of them wrote for, you know, the Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of guys at that time that came out of the improv were probably a little bit more educated. Okay. You know, probably went to college, probably, you know, a member of the National Lampoon or whatever, you know. But but the Comedy Store comics were like rock and roll. And so at the age of 21, you know, I never went to college. I was a stripper. What did I have in common with the average aged audience, which was 30?
Mm-hmm.
What did I have in common? I didn't know about politics that much then. I didn't know about anything. You know what I did know? I knew about sex because I just worked as a stripper,
mm-hmm.
you know, for 2 years, 3 years. So I knew about sex. And that was the one thing I had in common with people that were older than me is the ability to talk about sex. And I was in a place where, you know, they were all talking about sex. Guys were pigs, you know. I mean, they literally were. And so that was the easiest for me to get in and to mm-hmm. thrive. I mean, if you're going on, like I remember, I used to have the 8 o'clock spot at the Comedy Store for years, which is the worst spot because people are just stumbling in and all that kind of stuff. And I said to Mitzi Shore, I want to go up late. I can do it, Mitzi. I want to go up late. And so she's like, rah, rah, rah. And then the next week she put me on after Paul Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
Like at midnight, and I was yeah, that 8 o'clock spot ain't so bad.
Really? That was a rough spot.
Well, I mean, you know, going after Paul Mooney's is, you know, because he can get the crowd going
mm-hmm.
or not going in a great way. You know, he's tremendous. But it was a big lesson, and that was the one thing I had in common. So that's, I was known as a dirty comic. In fact, I got onto Star Search. And I was known as such a dirty comic that when I got onto Star Search, all my friends at the Comedy Store, all the comics were like, maybe I should give you a couple clean jokes. That's how I didn't have enough clean jokes for 2 minutes. But I managed to write some new jokes, and I actually won Star Search. And then that was a shock because then people would book me because I won Star Search. And for people that don't know, Star Search was like American Idol for comics mm-hmm. and singers at the time, you know. In the 80s, I think I won in 91. And that was always a shock when people would book me and I'd do my act, and then they'd be like, that's not what we expected.
This is not the Star Search, darling. That's awesome.
Meanwhile, I'm like, the worst jokes.
Well, so when did you start becoming political then? Or more political?
Well, I am a mother, and I didn't do comedy for 9 years after my kids were born. And when I came back to comedy, I didn't want to. Comedy is such a strange animal. Because when I came back to comedy, I didn't want to do any of my old jokes because I had moved on as a person by that point. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? I talked about sex and being a young girl and dating musicians and being filthy. And I still love dirty jokes. It's my natural sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, with kids and with all that and coming back and having to write new jokes and just being at this point of, like, I went to this show and there was this girl on stage and she was so dirty when I got back into comedy. And it was so, like, how to write a joke has changed, too. Rich Scheidner once said to me, comedy is now irony. It used to be sarcasm. And she mm-hmm. was up there and was so dirty in a way that just had no point. And she came up to me after the show and she was like, oh my God, you used to be my favorite comic and my whole act is based on because how dirty you used to be and blah, blah, blah. And I thought to myself, I need to grow as a comic. Like, I've done that and I don't want to be that. I don't want that to be the only thing that's remembered about me. So I started doing a couple political shows, and then that just kind of happened from there. And
you got bit by the bug.
I got bit by the bug. Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, where can people learn more about you?
Well, I would love it if people would follow me on Twitter at Felicia Michaels and at my website FeliciaMichaels.net. And there you go. Facebook too. I'm pretty active on my Facebook, sadly. I know. But now I'm starting to love Twitter. Politics has made me love Twitter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, me too. I'm more into Twitter than I ever have been.
Man, well. I am down the wormhole on Twitter. You know what I mean? You ever like meet someone on or follow someone on Twitter and then you're like, what the heck is going on? Like, Jesus, I've touched the devil.
I've seen so many pictures of their food that they just uploaded on Instagram and posted here too.
Yeah.
I've seen that too. Yeah. Felicia, thanks so much for
joining
us.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you. Have a good one.